to everybody who, those of you who are regulars, those who are not so regular, and especially to Rabbi David Orlovsky, who's going to present our first shiur today.
What time do I?
You have 35 minutes, and we'll finish at 5 to 10 of this show.
5 to 10. Okay.
5 to 4 10.
Wonderful. There's a question that used to bother me for many years, and like many of my questions, when I ask them to various people, they tend to disregard them. And in spite of that, I've managed to segue these ridiculous questions into an actual career. So, Baruch Hashem for that. But it's a question that has always bothered me. In Parshas Vayishlach, I know it's Parshas Toldos, but in Parshas Toldos we see the beginning of the Muhammad between Yaakov and Esav, and here's where it continues. So, how do you like that? Anyway, the famous story of the Ruffle had only one drush was on Parshas Korach, right? You know? So, whatever it is, he managed to segue in. But in any event, so he sends a message to his brother Esav, and he says, listen, I'm loving Garati, Ichalata, and I hope there's no bad feelings to it. I hope everybody's okay. Yeshua Malachim Yaakov Lamar, Banu El Achicha El Esav, Begam Halech Lekroscha Ba'arba Meos Ish Imai. He's coming to greet you with a group of 400 men. Usually, if you're coming with 400 men, you're not coming for a social visit. Right? He understands this is an army, and he's going to be attacked and possibly destroyed. And he's terrified. Terrified. 400, coming with an army of 400 men. And when I saw this question the first time, my first inclination, the first thing I found curious was, why 400? Why 400? So somebody said to me, Adam, it said 500, you'd ask 500? And I said, yep, absolutely. Because numbers have significance, right? I'll give you one example. It says, in the Magefa by Korach, speaking of Korach, the Magev of Korach says there were 14,700. There's a method to every madness. Anyway, there was 14,700 people who were killed in the Magev. Seems like a somewhat random number, but of course, when a Magev comes down, it kills in a certain amount here. You know, this wasn't the Black Death that was spreading by chance. You know, the Kodesh Baruch Hu sent down a Magev to send a message. 14,700 says the Meshech Chokhmah. Because, you know, whenever you see a number, you always remove the zeros. It's just taking it to a higher level. 14,700 is just 147, which is how old Yaakov was when he died. And when Yaakov died, he took his 12 sons to carry his Aron, except for Levi, because he's going to carry the Aron Hashem. So when Korach and the people were coming along to say, no, there's nothing special, nothing particular shave it, you're trying to undo what Yaakov did when he was 147, says the Meshech Chokhmah. So whenever you see a number, you have to be suspicious why that number is there, 400. And in fact, interestingly enough, you'll find the number 400 popping up more often than one would expect, i.e., Yodei Teda Kigeya Zarecha Be'eretz Olehem, right? And they're going to go down, Arba Me'o Shana. 400 years. Yeah. In this past week's parasha, Ephron Hachiti agrees to sell Moriz Machpelah to Avram Avinu for an outrageous sum of 400 shekels. And because of that, his name gets left out with a vav, because Ephron without a vav equals 400. So this seems to be more than a passing reference to the number 400. Also, it always struck me as strange that since we use our letters as a numbering system, obviously Judaism works in base 10, right? Some places, the Babylonians worked in base 60, I was in a computer office once, and there was a sign that says, there are only 10 types of people, those who understand binary and those who don't. You know what I mean? Like, base 2, you know. But when you talk about Judaism, when you talk about Torah, it's always base 10. It's always base 10, right? So you could say it's because we have 10 fingers on our hands. The truth of the matter is that 10 is not a very effective method. The English monetary system, which was of course superior to everything else, as everything in Britain has been, until the influence came in from the EU or the Americans, whoever it was, that forced you into base 10. It was in base 12. Because base 12 is a much better base to work with when you're dealing with not money and with divisions, because it's divisible by 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and 12. Right? Whereas 10 is only divisible by 1, 2, 5, and 10. So you can break it into much easier pieces and easier to work with. You know, that's why there's 12 inches to a foot, you know, and things like that. So 12 is a better base, but 10 is harder. But we always use 10. That's where our numbers always came from, right? So, because there are 10 fingers on the hand. But it's not because there are 10 fingers on the hand. There are 10 fingers on the hand because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with Asara Maros. Hashem spoke 10 times, and there are 10 spheres, and there are 10 forces in the world, and that's why the world is in base 10. So it's naturally in base 10. That's the way that it works. So, when we have our numbering system, so we're using letters. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hei, Vav, Zayin, Ches, Tes, Yud. Well, I should say Til, Tes. Right? Aleph through Tes. That's your ones column. And then Yud, Chaf, Lamed, Mem, Nun, Samach, Ayin, Pei, Sadi is your tens column. Takes you from 10 to 90. And then Kuf, Reishin, Tuf is your hundreds column. And there it more or less stops at the number 400. So that when we write dates, we write tough, tough, shin, you know, and all these kind of things, which really makes it quite difficult. A lot easier. Now, you could use Menatzpach, but it's very seldom used. Menatzpach, those who use that, so then Chaf Sofit would be worth 500, and Mem Sofit would be worth 600, Nun Sofit 700, Pei Sofit 800, Sadi Sofit 900. But you don't really find that people use that too often. Certainly not when we're writing our numbers. You almost never find that. So it's interesting that the entire Aleph Beis, for all intents and purposes, stops at 400. So let's understand a little bit about the letters of the Aleph Beis. The letters of the Aleph Beis and the positions that they're in obviously have tremendous significance. I'm doing a series of shiurim in Yerushalayim and in Beit Shemesh, as a matter of fact. I started this 4 years ago. Herein, I am basing myself on a Rashi's Chochmah, which says, the reason we say the Al-Chetz Lefi the Aleph Beis is because since with Arach HaToyim we destroyed the world, which was created with the Aleph Beis, so we have to say an Al-Chetz Lefi the Aleph Beis to be Mechaper on that and to correct it. I said, if that, working with that assumption, so then the letters that we're saying is the letters that we have to be mechaper in the Bria, and therefore the averus that are associated with each letter obviously holds within it the tikkun of that letter. So that on Mem we have Machal and the Mishteh, but you could put that on Aleph as a Chilav Shtiyah, and it would work just fine. The fact that we don't means that there has to be something inherent in, you know, Imitzalev, and Onus Verotzon, and Oshamnu, that's tied into the letter Aleph. And each one of these things have a particular significance. The Osius to Rabbi Akiva, which says that all of the letters were fighting who was going to start the Torah. So what does that mean? Because HaKol Cholech Acha HaHatchala, right? Everything goes after the beginning. However you start something, everything else follows through. It's the Taisus, where it says, if you take a psia gasa, so you're going to lose 1/500th of your eyesight. So I asked Taisus, so then if you take 500 steps, you should go blind. 500 big steps, you go blind. So it brings two tirutzim. One is, it's 1/500th of what's left. And just keep 1/500th of that, 1/500th of that, right? The other Taisus says, it's only the first step. Because chos koshus, and everything follows the beginning. So whichever letter you were going to start the Torah with, that was going to be the whole mahalach of the entire Bria. And therefore, it says, he started with the letter Beis, because Beis is Bracha. And the Maharal explains, it's not Stam, because the word Bracha starts with Beis. There's a lot of other words that start with Beis that are not Bracha. Yeah, you can find a lot of not nice words, you know. Anjib Leo. I mean, you can find Bahala. There's a lot of words you can find, you know, Bolel. There's different words you can find that have Beis that are not Bracha. So he says Beis is Bracha because Aleph is one and Beis is two, which means that it's more. And therefore he says the word Barech is made up of the letters that equal 2, 20, and 200. You have 1, you have 2. You have 10, you have 20. You have 100, you have 200. It's always more because the world has to be Bracha. It has to increase, it has to grow, otherwise it's not going to exist. Right? But you see, each letter has a particular power. Aleph is Hashem. And Aleph can even be written as a Vav and two Yuds, which Gematria is 26, Yud Kei Vav Kei. Aleph is Aluf. Aleph is the first, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a lot of references to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If that's the case, then what's tough? It's as far away as you can get from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the furthest point you can get. Tough is you know, to'inu. We have wandered around without any direction. We're no place. We're just nowhere. We're nowhere. Set toya, just as far as you can get. That's tough. Tough is total, as far away as a person gets from Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hence, the numbers end at 400, because 400 is the number that is as far away as you can get. Why? Says Rabbi Mechaya, because 400 is Gematria Ayin Ra. Ayin Ra. The Ayin Hara. Poo, poo, poo. Ayin Hara. Yeah? Ayin Hara. Yeah, and we see there's a few references to Ayin Hara. Sarah gives Hagar an Ayin Hara. Sarah gives Yishmael an Ayin Hara. You know, there's obviously this concept of Ayin Hara. There is this real concept of being able to look and being able to affect the world by looking at something. It's brought down in halacha. You shouldn't look at someone's field when it's fully grown because you're going to damage the grain with the Ayin Hara. We have the power to affect things with Ayin Ra, which is a fascinating concept. Hence, when Esav is coming, he's coming with the koyach of Ayin Ra. Right? Coming with the koyach. What's Ayin Ra? He's coming with the concept where he's coming and saying, look at my brother, the big shot. Here I am, I'm the Bechor, I'm the oldest. He steals my brachas. Now look at him. Look how much sheep you got. You know? Wow. Look at your lovely family. I think one of those wives was supposed to be mine, wasn't she? Which one? You know? I guess some of those kids might have been mine if you hadn't stolen it from me. Ayin Ra. In other words, I'm the hurt party. I'm injured. You took my stuff. You hurt me. And it's true. It's true. And that's why Yaakov was so frightened. Because he was afraid that he's coming at him with 400 men. He's coming at him with the koyach of Ayin Ra. So what does he do? He comes up with this plan where he takes lots of different types of animals and he sets them up and he takes this amount and that amount and he tells his people, when you set this up, each flock by itself, put space between each flock, Rashi, molei ayin, kedela haspia enoi, so also Russia. In other words, fill his eye. He's coming with the power of Ayin Ra. I want to fill up his eye. Look how much you've got. Wow. I'm giving. And his power is Ayin Ra. And you see that when he shows up, what does Yosef do? It says, the Nagash Yosef and Rachel, this is Paraklam and Gimel Pasuk Zayin. The Kulan Imos, with everyone, the mothers came before the children. Avo Berachel Yosef, Nagash Lefaneha, Amar Imi Yafas Toya, Shema Yitla Ba Einav, Shal Osa Rosha. Emot Kenegda, the Agveno Mil Histakel Ba. I'm going to stop him from looking at my mother.
Mikan zoch Yosef lebirkas alei ayin. Therefore, he got the bracha that he's protected from ayin ra, Yosef. So, you see that this is the power. It's an unbelievable power. Ephraim has an opportunity, and by the way, it's the irony is tremendous. Because Ephraim, that day, was appointed, Rashi tells us, was appointed to a position of authority. He was lifted up and taken up and given a special position, and he didn't understand that the only reason he got this position was so that he'd be able to help Abraham. So Abraham shouldn't have to deal with somebody who wasn't on a level. You know? In World War II, at one point, there was some sort of negotiations between the Russians and the Americans, whatever it was, and the Americans said to the Russians, no, these people aren't of high enough rank, you know, for us to talk to. You have to send, you know, bigger, you know, generals, colonels, whatever it is. They said, no problem. They made a phone call, now they're generals. So, not a problem. They were elevated specifically for this purpose. Because you want to, you're a general, no problem. Congratulations, you're a general. You know what I mean? Like, I'll raise you up. That's what Ephraim was. All of a sudden, he got this tremendous promotion, and everyone's thinking to himself, "Well, I'm really a big shot. You're a big shot because I have to deal with somebody who's important." You know, so in order for me to deal with you, but Ephraim had this, was given this gift and was given this opportunity, and now you have the chance to think to yourself, "What do I want to do with this?" And Avram comes along, and I look at this opportunity in order to make a quick killing. You know, I can ask an outrageous price. And Avram gave it to him right away. Interesting story with the Satmar Rebbe. This guy comes to him with a terrible tale of woe, and he's in such terrible hardship. You know, and he says, "And Rebbe, I need $5,000. I don't know what to do." So the Rebbe says, "Let me see what I can do." And he goes in the back and he comes back with $4,923. He says, "I'm sorry, it's the best I could do." He says, "Rebbe, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I'll manage to get the rest somehow. You know, thank you." So Gabbai says, "Rebbe, you could have given me the whole $5,000. It was really not a big deal, you know?" He says, "Did you ever wonder why Avram didn't negotiate with Ephraim? Ephraim asked this outrageous, ridiculous request. Give me 400 shekels. Avram said, okay. The rest of his life, Ephraim said, I should have asked for 500. he says, people usually need more than what they're asking for. He says, he would have said 5,000. I said, sure. I took it out. He was like, oh, yeah, I should have asked for everything that I really need. You know what I mean? You know? This is those who are in fundraising. You know what I mean? And I'm not. I'm in debt management. I'm working on a new book called "The Joys of Overdraft." But this is always the goal: is that how much do you ask for? You know what I mean? How much do you ask for? Because you have to. You don't want to ask too much, or just sound ridiculous, and you don't want to end up, you know, asking for less when the person would have given you more. You know what I mean? And that happens. It's happened to me on rare occasions that, you know, I'm going to go speak simply, say, how much do you charge? I tell him, he says, oh, that's an insult. I'm going to give you more. I was like, listen, I don't want to insult you. So I'm prepared to take it just so I don't hurt your feelings. Yeah, it doesn't happen often. But anyway, on those rare occasions, because you have to try to be a judge. So Ephraim looks in and he says, here's an opportunity for 400 shekels. And what does Ephraim's name become? 400 shekels. That's all you are. That's your entire sum total of your existence in this world. You know, Ephraim, when you take out the vav, right, you basically have Afran. You're just dust. Just dust. You know? When Ophir. Avram says, I'm the Ophir of the Aether. I'm dust and I'm ashes. Right? What's the difference between Ophir and Aether? Ophir is dust, Aether is ashes. So, he says, dust, dirt, is something you can use to grow in. It has no past, but it has a future. Aether is something that you can't use it for anything. It's worthless. It's, you can't knead it into a mixture or anything. It's just nothing, ashes. You know? It's something that had a past and has no future. And he says, I have nothing. I have no past. I have no future. Abraham says, I'm totally nothing. That's why Kodesh Baruch Hu gives him two mitzvahs. He gives him the Eifer Pora, which allows you to have a future. That, you know, you tell me mace, and mace is the total end, and you can move beyond that to a future. And he gets the upper of the sota where it's megala, the past. So upper, which usually has only has a future, he gave us an upper that has a past, and afer, which usually has only a past, he gave us one that has a future. But upper is something that exists in potential. It's potential. You've been handed an opportunity. What are you going to do with this opportunity, Ephraim? And Ephraim chose instead to say, I want to use this to make money. And that's all he ever got. He could have been remembered for all eternity as the person who helped Avram Avinu find the Kever and Maris Machpelah. Like Hiram is remembered as the one who helped build the Beis HaMikdash. You know, there's moments in our lives where we have opportunities and we look at it and you say, okay, what am I going to use in this? And what am I going to do? Ayin Ra is as far away as you can get from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Why? Because when a Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world, at each step he says, V'yar Elokim ki toiv. Hashem looks and sees good. Hashem sees good in everything. And at the end, it's absolutely amazing, at the end of the 6 days of creation, a Kodesh Baruch Hu says, and Hashem saw everything he made, and it was very good. That was after the chayt of Adam and Chava. That was after they got kicked out of Gan Eden. That's after the world was destroyed, and Hashem saw it as tov ma'od. A lot of it has to do with how you choose to look at things. You know? There's a famous story with Chavetz Chaim. I used to tell this over when I was training people working in Kiruv. You know, the Chavetz Chaim was in an inn, and this burly Russian Jewish soldier comes in and sits down, and he's acting disgusting, and he's talking disgusting, and it's just horrible. It's a terrible scene. So one of the people say, could the Chavetz Chaim say something to this guy? Meaning, like, you know, kill him, you know, with the Shem of Farish or something. Like, get rid of this guy. That's what we usually, you know, the approach. The Chavetz Chaim goes over to this burly Russian soldier and says, what a tzaddik you are. All those years in the Russian army and you never converted. And the big burly Russian soldier started to cry. And he says, Rebbe, you don't know. They took me away from my family when I was 5 years old. They beat me. They starved me. They put me in a little stone box. I couldn't sit down without a blanket in the freezing cold. They did everything they could, but I knew I was a Yid and I wasn't going to convert. And the Chavetz Chaim made a kesh with this man, and eventually he came back. And I remember on one occasion I said this over to a group, you know, people working in the field, and they said, what a great line. Like write that down next time I meet a big burly Russian soldier. What a tzaddik you are. All those years. I said, no. It means that everybody else looked at this guy and saw a behemoth and saw a beast. And it took the eyes of the Chavetz Chaim to look at the same man and see him for what he really was. To be able to look underneath and see the godless inside. Those are the eyes of a tzaddik. That's an ayin tov. That's how Kodesh Baruch Hu looks. Hashem looks and sees good. It's a famous story. You know, Lazar Silver, who was the chief rabbi of America and Canada, as he was always careful to point out. Self-appointed, I should point out. A bucker was once driving him, and he says, go faster, go faster. The guy was going like 100 miles an hour. He says, Rebbe, what are we going to do? He says, just go, you know. And finally, you know, the cop pulls him over, you know, and he says, what's going on? He says, well, I have the chief rabbi of the United States and Canada. Canada in the back. And I was like, okay, fine, go. So anyway, so he shows up. Yeah, World War II, and he says, I'm the chief rabbi of America and Canada. You know, he says, I want a position in the army. Okay, they make him a major, colonel, whatever it was. You know, they give him a uniform. And he goes to the DP camps to be able to help the Jews. And he's trying to make a minion. And he's got nine people, he doesn't have a tenth. And he's got this one guy. And he says, come make a minion. He says, I would never daven again. He says, why? He says, because, he says, I was in the concentration camp. And somebody snuck in a sitter. and he used to charge people half a day's ration to use that sitter for 5 minutes. And we were starving. Everybody was starving. And to make people give up a half a day of their rations to use a sitter, anyone who could do that, I would never live without it again. Rav Lazer Silver says, why are you looking at him? Look at the people who are willing to give up a half a day's rations to use a sitter for 5 minutes. You know? It's a bad world. You can see bad everywhere, trust me. You can find bad in every situation. You know? There are those people who say that every silver lining has a cloud. You know, really, you know? You know? You look at what? You look at things and you say, terrible. It's terrible. It's all terrible things. And you look at the same things and you can see greatness. And you can see hope. And you can see, you know, people struggling and going for strength. And that's the difference. Because Kadosh Baruch Hu is an Ayin Tov. He looks at everything and he sees it good. What's Ayin Ra? Ayin Ra is if you want to, you have the opportunity. In America, you know, the Internal Revenue Service, the tax authority. So you can call up and report somebody. And you have them get an audit. You know? And the only flip side of that is that they might decide to check you too. while they're on the case. You know? Because that's called bringing down Midas Hadin. And you can bring down Midas Hadin on a person. You can do it. We have that koch to bring down Midas Hadin. My father, Oliver Shalom, used to be able to talk his way out of every single ticket. I don't know how he did it. A police officer would pull him over, and he could talk his way out of any situation. I can't get away with anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has worked very hard to keep me on the straight and narrow. There's only one time that I talked my way out of a ticket. It was absolutely amazing, and I didn't even intend to. It was Elul. And my brother was visiting from America. I live in Har Nof. And I live in Agassi. I was driving back from Imre Shefer. And I have a Dibbureit in my car, you know, where you put the speaker for the phone. And I had received a ticket for talking on my cell phone when I was driving. So I was very careful to always put in my Dibbureit. But I was coming down my own street when the phone rang. So I didn't have it in the Dibbureit. I was just, 2 houses away. I pull out my phone. It's my brother who's going from America. On my little quiet street, there happened to be a police officer behind me. And he pulls me over. And he says, I said, yes, my brother's here. You see I have a Dibbureit, this and that. He says, I'm required to give you a ticket. I said, ato lo mechuyav, ato yachol. I said, you don't have to, you can. I said, you can give me that ticket or you cannot give me the ticket. The power is in your hands. I said, and you right now have the ability to either bring din or bring rachamim. And that's completely up to you. I get crystal yellow, you know? I said, you can give me that ticket. You can give me din. And I said, if it's din, it's din on me, it's din on you, it's din on your family, it's din on the whole country. I said, we just had a war last year. Didn't we need another din? Do we need more din in this country? I said, you can say to me, I'll tell you, says, hold the bomb, be careful, don't do it again, and you should show me rachamim. And if it's rachamim, it would be for me, and for you, and for your family, and for the whole country. That if you don't have to do anything. You can choose what to do. And the guy looks at me, and he says, don't do it again. I couldn't believe it. I wish I could tell you, Rosh Hashanah, I davened with as much intensity as I tried to talk my way out of a 200 shekel fine. You know what I mean? Life and death, no. 200 shekels, that's real money. You know what I mean? It's up to you. And when you do Ayin Ra, what you're doing is you're bringing the din down. You have the power to bring din down. And that's what we do. When we, with Ayin Ra, we do, oh, nice car. Wish I could afford a car like that. Now my car is, I'm lucky it's still running, but I guess you're doing well, huh? Doing well. Oh, I see you remodeled. Nice kitchen. Nice suit. Oh, that's a real expensive one, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's Ayin Ra. Oh, you can turn around and see good in everything. And that's what Yaakov did. What he did to counteract this power was to be able to was to be able to take it and work it. Ephron was just dust. He was only potential. He could have grown things. He could have made things. He could have been there to be remembered in Klal Yisrael.
So it's an unbelievable story with Rav Levi Yitzchak Bedichev.
It's just an unbelievable story. It was a guy who was a poor, mamish, real poor schlepper. A low yutzlach. You know what I mean? The Eben Ezra says, he says he was never successful at money. He says, if I was selling tachrichen, people would stop dying. You know? No luck. I just had no luck. So this guy was never arrogant kippy. He was out. He was trying to sell something. Who knows what? You know what I mean? He couldn't sell. He came home. He had no money. You know. So his wife said to him, that's it. No sudamaf sekas for you. Get out. So he was going into Yom Kippur without having even eaten anything. And he was, you know, as hungry as, you know, and he goes, shuffles into shul to the back bench with all the other schleppers, losers, and he sits down and he's hungry and I'm going to go into Yom Kippur now. And he sees, you know, I remember the name, Reb Wolf, you know what I mean, the rich man of the community is sitting in front. He's got a beautiful silk, you know, kittel, and he's got a beautiful leather, you know, in golden bust, you know, machzor, and he's saying to Zaka, and he's stuffed, of course, he had a beautiful suda, you know, and he remembers that Rav Wolf has a softbox. If there's at least have a shmektabik, I'll go in to, you know, Yom Kippur with something. So he shuffles over to him, he says, you know, Rav Wolf, maybe I could have a shmektabik. And he looks up, he's saying to Zaka, he says, the tainus hasn't even started yet. And already you need a shmektab. Go sit down and say to a zaka, you know what I mean? Come on, Davin. He turns and he starts schlepping away. And he looks up to Shemayim and he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm not even worth a shmektab. If you're going to do something bad, Erev Yom Kippur is the wrong time to do it. Just a rule of thumb. And then Allah Harav and Shemayim said, look at this guy. This guy has lots of food and lots of money. He's got everything. And this poor shlepper, did he worry before his suda if anybody else had anything to eat? Did he worry about anybody else? No, he's just worried about himself. I demand justice. And Kodesh Baruch Hu said, okay. And it was Geyser that he was going to lose all his money, and this shlepper was going to get it. Well, afterwards, you know, he started selling, I don't know, kosher cloth or something, you know, bazookas, and everybody grabbed them all up. Then he moved up to Dalamina, you know, he's doing great, you know what I mean? He starts selling silver, you know, as we got people, whatever he's selling, people are grabbing up. He gets a little real estate, he gets a little this, he's going, he can't believe it. As everything's going on, this guy's making money, hand over fist. In the meantime, the rich guy, his warehouse burnt down, his boat sank, this happened, that happened, and bit by bit he's losing all his money, and he's watching everything disappearing before his eyes. He doesn't know what to do, and he runs to the Rebbe. He says, Rebbe, something's going on here. So he says, oh my gosh, this is terrible. He says, yeah, I'm losing all my money. He says, is anything else happening in town? Is anyone making money? He says, you know that schlep over there, Rabbi Yossel, whatever his name is, he's making a fortune. He says, did you have any dealings with him? What do you mean? Well, what do I have to do with him? You know, I'm a big businessman. He said nothing. You know, I don't know. Any interactions? Oh, no. What happened? Erev Yom Kippur, he came to me, asked me for, you know, a shmektabik, and I told him to go away. Oh. Not Erev Yom Kippur. Yeah, Erev Yom Kippur. Oh. Hate to break this to you, big guy, but I'm afraid it was going to Jemaim. You lost all your money. It's going to him. No! Yeah, that's it. You're finished. No! What am I supposed to do? He says, I only have one idea. This is all I can suggest. When you lose all your money and you're really poor, ask him for a shmektabik. And if he doesn't give it to you, then you'll get it back. Anyway, this poor wealthy guy is reduced to mamish absolute poverty. He's wearing rags. He's walking in the street. He doesn't have food to eat. Doesn't know what to do. And he's waiting. He's waiting. And eventually the rich guy makes a big shidduch, you know, with the daughter of a rav from another town, and they all come to town, and with Levi Yitzchak's Masada Kedushin, and he's waiting. And he's waiting till their mom is standing under the chuppah, and they're about to give the ring, and he shuffles up, and he grabs him by his coat, and he says, Erev Yid, and give me a shmektabik. He says, sure. And the guy faints, he hits the ground, he doesn't know what to do. So he's beside himself. So, you know, no one knows what's going on. They carry him out, you know. At the end, the Rebbe calls the two of them in and explains what happened. So the poor guy says, that's what happened? The guy says, that's what happened? He says, oh, I didn't know. He says, in that case, I'll split the money with you. I'll split the money with you. The poor guy says, I didn't know this was your money. No problem, we'll split it. Okay with you? He says, yeah, it's fine. Because the only way to fight an Ayin Ra is with an Ayin Tov. And that's why whenever there's bad, the only way that we can solve this, the only way we can remove the Midas HaDin is to be able to turn around and see the good. You know? And it's a challenge in times, it's a challenge in situations to be able to look over, especially at the people who annoy you the most, and the people who upset you the most, and the people who you think have done you wrong the most. You know? My brother, who he moved to a new community and he says, I'm not gonna what? My brother, he moved to a new community and he decided that he was not gonna have any enemies. He wasn't going to be upset at anybody. And this one person did a terrible thing to him. I mean, everybody said it was a terrible thing. And the guy didn't realize that my brother thought it was such a terrible thing, you know? It was a terrible thing, in absolute terms. My brother was very upset. So what did he do? He went out and bought him flowers from Erev Shabbos. He says, really, I wanted to shove it down his throat. But every Erev Shabbos, I would bring him flowers. He says, today we're very close. He never knows why I started bringing him flowers in the first place. But I knew the only way to remove this is with an Ayin Tov. The only way to remove it is by doing something good. Mitz Hashem, you know, we live in difficult times, and the only thing that we can really do, that we need to do, is to turn around and look for the good. The Ayin Tov that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with is the only way to cancel out the Ayin Ra that is bringing so much destruction to all of us. Mitz Hashem.